are the biggest entrepreneur destination on the planet. This is Business Rockstars, and we have an awesome guest today. We've got Clay Alexander, founder and CEO of Ember, creators of this, keeping my tea warm.
Yeah.
So excited about
awesome.
Your company and your product.
Awesome.
Why don't you start by telling our viewers and listeners what Ember is?
So Ember is the world's first temperature-controlled coffee mug. So basically, you pour your coffee or tea in, and it will cool your coffee down to your set point and then hold it there for hours on end. So basically, we've just reinvented the coffee drinking experience.
So cool. So this is the first product within a line. There's going to be many other products like it, correct?
That's right. We have a whole pipeline of stuff that we're working on. Beyond coffee, when we start to get into 2018 and beyond, we have self-heated dinner plates where you will eat your meals on a dinner plate that will keep your food at the perfect temperature from the first bite to the last bite.
Very innovative stuff, but let's go back to what we have right here.
Yes, this is the coffee
mug. Self-heating coffee, and as a coffee snob, I can tell you this is genius. I love it.
That's
you
awesome.
Already know that because I'm sure you know lots of people who wanted this.
Yes.
But so cool. Yeah, I can't tell you how many times I've spent $5 for a coffee and it hasn't been the right temperature, and then you're kind of mad about spending that $5.
Right.
And so, yeah, just tell me where the inspiration came from.
Well, the whole thing started back with the plate, where my eggs got cold on my plate in 2009. I had just sold my light bulb to GE in 2009, and I had come off of about 3 years of solving thermal science challenges. And so I had thermal science on my mind, and I'm eating scrambled eggs, and I'm sitting there in my kitchen, I'm talking to my wife, and I get about halfway through my scrambled eggs, and they get cold on my plate. And I'm like, looking down at my plate, I'm like, okay, this is the 21st century. My eggs shouldn't be getting cold on my plate. The plates haven't changed since the caveman days, right? I mean, basically, plates now are just a slab of ceramic. So it's like there's nothing. So I thought, okay, at bare minimum, my plate should at least be able to, like, keep my food at the perfect temperature. So as an inventor from birth, I was like, I got to do something about this. And so I started strapping batteries and temperature control technology to the bottom of my dinner plates in my kitchen and
Stop
making
it.
These prototypes.
Hilarious.
And then I would like put like a fillet of salmon on there and I would eat it. And all the way to the last bite, there'd be like steam piping out of the salmon. And I thought, oh my gosh, I'm really onto something here. And so I was looking around the kitchen and I'm thinking coffee mugs, soup bowls, baby bottles for heating the milk up, chafing dishes. I mean, my mind started
anything
racing.
That
anything
that you consume that's warm.
Literally anything.
And cold.
Exactly. We have cooling technology as well. So I started filing patents in 2009, 2010 and doing my own R&D. And I self-funded the company for the first 5 years using profits from my previous businesses. So I self-funded and we filed patents all over the world to protect the technology. But we decided to go to market with the coffee mug first because it's such a pain point that I think anyone can understand.
For sure. Okay, so I like a really key mention that you made, and that's you need to file a patent. Once you have these great ideas, if you want to be an inventor, if you are an inventor, you have these brilliant ideas, you probably need to check first that nobody else has the patent.
That's step A.
Yeah.
And if you're good, then you want to file because you have to be protected. We live in this world with these giant monster corporations, and for us to, for a young inventor to go out and create something, you want to make sure you have some protection. So you really got to get a patent on file before you start getting serious about your invention.
Okay. And I heard you mention that you've been an inventor since you were a child. So tell me about the beginning of your inventing
days.
Okay.
So when all of my friends were out playing sports, I was in my inventor shed, like in the dark with a clip light and a soldering iron, like literally building inventions. And like I would take apart, my mom would buy me a toy, an electronic toy. I'd play with it for a day and then I'd take it apart into a million pieces, rebuild it into something else. Like I made my RC hovercraft turn into a door opener and closer for my bedroom. Like just constantly rebuilding things. And so that's kind of like my childhood, which is like
the silliest creation that you made as a child. Or maybe most genius.
Well, I don't know. I mean, the first thing I made was this like pen. I was like probably like 4 or 5 years old. And I took a bunch of yarn and I wrapped it around 4 pens that all had different color inks. And then I had all these little mechanisms on it. And it was like, oh, wow, I can tilt it. And then I used to be a big baseball fan. So I made this hat. This is the answer to your question.
Okay.
The silliest. I made
we
this
found
hat.
It.
I made. I had to think about it. I made this hat. I have a picture of it that you would die. It's like this baseball hat, and it has all these electronics and batteries wrapped all the way around it. I had a megaphone on it that I could talk through. I had, soda holders. I had a fan that was mounted right here that would blow air on my face.
Oh my gosh.
Batteries and solar panels and lights. And it was all...
If only it were fashionable, because it certainly was functional.
It was like 20 pounds. And I would go to the baseball, like San Diego Stadium, and wear this hat and heckle the players and stuff.
Oh, funny. So I think a lot of our entrepreneurs had signs of being entrepreneurs as they were kids, but then sometimes that's kind of squelched within you when you're a kid and it's not nurtured. So what were some of the experiences that you nurtured that part of yourself and decided, hey, I'm actually going to make this my profession? Or was there a time when you decided that, hey, I'm really going to go for this and make this my profession to be an inventor?
Actually, I started as an entrepreneur. I had this like gap in my life where I put my inventor hat aside and then it came back. Okay. So the gap was when I wanted to be an entrepreneur and I started my first business, my lighting design business when I was 22 years old. And I started getting jobs at Universal Studios and doing lighting for the theme park and for some of their bigger live events. And I built that business bootstrap style from ground up. I had no outside capital. I would like collect a deposit for the job. I'd use the deposit to like pay for the guys and the trucks and the gear to get in and do the job. And then I would like, and I just grew that company out of nothing. That business is still around today. It's 19 years old. I own it 100% outright. And I have a president that operates the business. We've got about 60 employees. It's like the American dream. It just self-operates from my perspective. It's a very complex business. But I did that for a while. And then we were working for Mattel and we were doing lighting in New York for Mattel. And they want us to light this showroom. And we needed to have like 1,000 track lights in the showroom. And the heat load from the track lights and the electricity load would have been too much for the building to handle because it was in a historic high-rise building. And so I was like, oh man, I need to make an LED. I'm kind of skipping some parts of my story, but I created the world's first LED track light. And that was in 2006.
Because of that need and
exactly.
that moment.
Exactly. Yeah. Because Mattel hired my lighting design firm to do worldwide research to find out, is there a such thing as LED track lights? And they didn't exist. And here I am sitting there as an entrepreneur going, wait a minute, I've got a Fortune 500 company that has a need. It does not exist anywhere in the world. I'm an entrepreneur, like, let me do something about it. So
yeah.
I started, like, hiring engineers.
Got my first client.
Yeah, no, seriously. So I started hiring engineers, and I just, like, jumped all over it. One of my best skill sets is that I'm a team builder. So if I learn a weakness that I have, I'll go and hire the best person in the world to fill that weakness, right? And so that's how I like to build businesses. But I put this team together, and I made this track light, and we launched it to the world, and it just got huge press. And it was like, that was kind of like my first. So that's how I got back into inventing.
Got it.
Does that make sense?
Oh, yeah, totally. Okay.
Tell
me what happened with that invention.
The track light business, I ran that business and grew it for 10 years. And it was called Journée Lighting. And that became one of the most reputable track light brands in the lighting industry. And I sold that company a year and a half ago to a company called EcoSense, which is backed by Bain Capital. So I sold that about a year and a half ago. I wanted to kind of streamline my life so I could focus on Ember. Ember, I'm building the next big consumer brand right now, and it's a big like task. And I thought, you know what, let me stay focused on Ember. So I sold my lighting business. I still have my lighting design company, which I will own indefinitely till I go to the grave. I just love that business, and it doesn't take a lot of my time. But whereas the light fixture company took a lot of my time.
What do you love the most about Ember and being the founder of it?
I love that I can wake up in the morning with a new, fresh idea, and I have literally a world-class team in place. I have guys from Nokia and Apple and Google and all over the place that have come to work for Ember, and we have this world-class team. And so if I come up with an idea, I go in and I talk to my team about it, and we can make anything. I could make an airplane tomorrow morning if I decided to make an airplane. Like, that's the team. I have such an incredible team. So we are staying very laser focused on this concept of embedding temperature control in dishware and drinkware.
Yeah, wow. Okay, well, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk more about funding, how you raised funds, how you're spending your money, all of that. So much more when we come back. We are the biggest entrepreneur destination on the planet. This is Business Rockstars.
This is Business Rockstars. Rockstars.
Message and data rates may apply.
Earning your degree from one of the top business schools in the country might sound impossible to fit into your workload. But what if there were a business degree that furthered your career and gave you access to world-renowned faculty, leaders, and mentors, all on your schedule? One that opened doors to some of the most influential CEOs, tech companies, law firms, entrepreneurs, and thought leaders. And what if you could earn that degree in as little as 16 months, 100% online? To find out more, text NET to 79645. That's NET to 79645. Start your online MBA, information management, or business analytics master's program from the W.P. Carey School of Business at Arizona State University today. Learn more about the W.P. Carey Business Graduate Programs online. Text NET to 79645. That's NET to 79645.
We are the biggest entrepreneur destination on the planet. This is Business Rockstars, and we are continuing our conversation with a major rock star, Clay Alexander, founder and CEO of Ember. So I'm going to give you the opportunity to brag a little bit because you guys have had a ton of success and recent success. So tell me about where you're being distributed and where you're at today.
Okay, so we launched on November 21st with Starbucks, and I was just so proud to have like landed that partner as a retailer.
I mean, like, huge. Starbucks in the coffee space. Yeah,
exactly. And we worked really hard to kind of get the right intros and get in there and get them to. And by the way, the thing that I love about Starbucks is they don't mess around. Like, if there's a product in that store, it has gone through the most rigorous of testing. You don't even know. I mean, the QA, and then they inspect our factory. And I mean, it was like, it was awesome, actually. And so.
And quite the honor after that. Yeah.
That we passed. We passed
totally.
Everything. And so that, I mean, that makes you feel good as a maker of goods and that you like pass the Starbucks brand bar as well. So we felt that we have had from the beginning, even before we signed with Starbucks, that we had a really good brand alignment with them. And you can kind of think of this, you can look at the way our products are designed, the way they function and our brand. And there's really a nice alignment between the two brands. We're taking the high road, right? We take like, we go for like the premium kind of experience, right?
Right.
And so we landed that partnership. We launched in 100 of their top stores in the country. We hit a lot of the more kind of urban areas, like there's 21 in Manhattan alone, 21 Starbucks stores that carry Ember in Manhattan, some like 14 in San Francisco. Like we kind of went around to the major cities, and we just crushed it. I mean, we didn't know, and Starbucks didn't know in terms of how well the product would do on the shelves because it's a brand new disruptive product. There's never been a temperature controlled coffee mug before, right? So we were all trying to forecast. We had our own forecast, they had their forecast. And so we loaded the stores with inventory and we just sold out within like a week and a half. Boom. All across the whole country. Boom. And so it was just, I'll be honest.
Is that your main distribution right now? It's just
Starbucks and online. Okay. Embertech.com is the other way.
Right.
But now we're on Amazon. And we're also in talks with Best Buy. So we have a lot of expansion
and
happening.
And I'm sure that's just going to expand more and more on your distribution. Is that one of your goals right now?
That's what I'm working real hard on right now is our retail expansion. Yeah.
That's amazing that it sold out so quickly. I would imagine, you tell me if I'm right or wrong, that one of the challenges with being a disruptor and coming out with a new product is that brand recognition, having people know what it is and
that's
how
right.
it works and they want it, but knowing that they want it.
That's right. Yeah.
So how do you do that?
Okay, so there's a lot of layers, right? So the first thing is you think about the customer that comes in the door and has never seen Ember before, and they're like, what is this thing on the shelf? And we have a really beautiful display in all the Starbucks stores where the mug actually sits bolted to a backdrop and the screen is on and it's actually going through its motions and you can come up and you can rotate the dial and change the temperature literally in the store. And it says on the display, Ember, like control your temperature, taste the difference. And we worked really hard on that tagline because we're like,
the messaging that you really need to be clear, the customers to interact with
it
so they know.
We knew that if we could get people touching, I mean, you just feel the finish.
Yeah.
You know?
It's just so quality.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so if we weren't able to put this out on display, I don't think our sales would have been that as good, right?
Yeah.
Because you want to get your product
out there.
For sure.
Well, speaking of, let's put our hands on it a little bit. Show me how it works.
So basically, you pour in your coffee or tea, and then basically it'll wake itself up. It's automatic. This one's empty. Obviously, it says empty.
Mine's full. I've been enjoying heated at 130 degrees beverage.
That's good. I prefer 133 degrees, so everyone has their own. And that's the fun thing about Ember is that you can go around and ask Ember customer, what's your favorite temperature? And they'll say, 138 or 128, and they know it. Like, boom.
Oh, funny.
And
yeah,
because
you
test
it out to see what's just right.
Exactly. Yeah, so all you have to do is rotate the dial on the bottom. It's basically, think of it as like almost like a Nest thermostat but for your coffee. And you just spin the dial and you can set whatever drinking temperature you want.
And you probably realize just how much you love this product once you then go back for, you know, one or two coffees when you're like, this isn't at my perfect temperature.
That's exactly right. And we always say it's like you can't go back, right? Like once you've had experienced Ember, you can't go back. Like I guarantee you tomorrow you'll wake up and you drink, if you don't have your Ember and you drink it out of a regular coffee mug and it'll get lukewarm and then cold and you're like, it just, you know.
I love it. So then you also have an app to go with it.
Yeah,
so
we
have an
app.
Tell me about the development of that. Where did the idea come from? All of that.
Yeah, so I wanted, so it's for notifications and also for presets. So we'll start with notifications. So when you pour in coffee or tea, and let's say it takes a few minutes to get down to your temperature, once it hits your temperature, you'll get a notification on your phone, your iPhone or your Android device. It'll vibrate in your pocket and it'll say, you've reached your perfect coffee drinking temperature. And if you have an Apple Watch, it literally will vibrate on your wrist and tell you you've reached the perfect drinking temperature.
I love it.
And you can change your coffee drinking temperature from your Apple Watch as well.
Oh, wow. That's so neat. So what was it like developing that? Was that the easy part?
It was super fun because I thought, boy, wouldn't it be cool if you could change your coffee from your Apple Watch? Like, you don't need that in life, but it's really super fun.
It's a fun little,
To show it. So the first thing is notifications because you want to know when you're... And the other thing is when the battery life gets low, it'll say time for a recharge. And it'll give you a ping.
That's key.
So we want to remind people to make sure to charge it. So this is the
charging
poster.
And that's how you charge
poster.
It, just
that's
like
it.
That.
It would be charged. There's a little cord that comes out and plugs in.
So you just leave it overnight.
Yeah, it only needs an hour and a half.
So how often do you have to charge it?
Well, I mean, what happens is when you develop a consumer product like this, you want people to get into a habit, right? And so we designed the battery life to basically take you through your average day. So we have enough power in there to give you two coffee drinking cycles that are 1 hour long. And then the battery will go dead after that. So the idea is you come home, you have a ritual. This is what I do. I just like put the bottle brush in, scrub it, and then it can be wet and everything. And you just set it down on the coaster and you just go to bed.
Oh, that's
And so when you come up in the morning, it's fully charged and ready for your day.
Awesome. So you've had some great partners and really big name advisors.
Yeah.
How did you get some of these people on board?
Whew. So I like to consider myself a master networker.
Oh, that's good for an entrepreneur. Yeah.
Honest to goodness, that is probably one of the most important things of being an entrepreneur is being able to just share your ideas with everyone. And when there's someone that's in your life, it's an uncle's cousin's brother that is a CEO at a big company or something, get to that person.
So we have one more minute. So I want to know, what is just that last piece of advice that you want to leave with our entrepreneurs and aspiring inventors?
Every day I wake up excited. And I'm like, I can't wait to go to the office today.
You can tell that you love talking about this project.
Like, I mean, this is my baby. So I gave birth to this baby. I also have a beautiful daughter, too, like a human baby.
Yeah.
But I feel like I think the biggest mistake people can make is they go, okay, I want to make a lot of money. And if you put that first, that's bad. You got to go, I want to change the world in a certain way. I want to change the way people eat and drink. And that's why I created this, right? And so if you start with that, like, what do you want to do and what do you want to change? And then you start, the pieces of the puzzle start coming together and it just starts snowballing. And if you can talk about your vision and how you want to do something big and you're passionate about it, like, boom, it all just happens. Like, it just snowballs.
Love your passion. Love your product. Can't wait to use this. So genius. Thank you so much
Cheers.
For stopping by. Cheers to Ember. We are the biggest entrepreneur destination on the planet. This is Business Rockstars.
This report is brought to you by Facebook. There are a lot of questions right now on how Facebook works. People are asking, who can see what I share? Why do I see posts from ads? And how does Facebook use the information I share online? Facebook spokesperson Michelle Mandara offers tips on how to improve your experience.
You have control over the content you see and share on Facebook. If you see a post from someone that you aren't really into, you can click snooze and temporarily remove that person. Or if you want to see more photos of your best friend's baby, then click see first so they always appear first in your feed. You will see ads on Facebook since that's what allows Facebook to be free, but you can remove or block ads that you don't like. Our ad preferences allows you to control the ads you see on Facebook.
The app controls show you what apps you've logged into, the information you have shared, and how to remove them. For more, visit facebook.com/help.
We're here to inspire, inform, and connect a community of entrepreneurs. I'm Alex Worley. This is Business Rockstars. And my guest today, Minna Herskowitz. She's the co-founder of Sandbox Fitness. We're so glad you're here. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah. So did you always want to be an entrepreneur?
Yes. Ever since I was a kid, I have been working for my dad's company. And I just loved what he did, and I wanted to grow up one day and own my own business as well.
What kind of company did he have?
He actually has one of the largest dog kennels in Maryland.
Oh, wow.
Probably on the East Coast. Yeah. So, yeah.
So, what was the main thing that you learned from him, watching him as you grew up?
I guess it was like work hard, play hard.
Okay.
We would hustle and work like crazy. And it was like whenever people had vacation, we didn't because we were watching people's dogs.
Yeah.
When the normal vacation times were going on. And then, when we went on vacation, it was, not the normal times, but we went on vacation all the time. And I just loved how our family dynamic growing up was just always so fun. We would go on trips all the time. And I just know like if you put in the effort, you're able to take vacation and enjoy life.
Yeah. So would you say that that work ethic is crucial for what you do now in your business?
Yes. Yeah. I mean, I'm brand new. So our business is like not even at the point that I can go play hard yet.
Yeah.
But that's the goal, is just to get it to the point where, I can work, and then eventually be able to take vacation,
yeah,
take off when I want, and, work when I can.
Takes a lot of work to get there.
Yes.
So how did you come up with Sandbox Fitness? At what point did you decide, I want this to be my entrepreneurial endeavor?
Let's see. Well, I've been a trainer for, since I was 18.
Yeah.
So for, 11, 12 years now.
And that's kind of entrepreneurial in spirit, because you have to get your own clients.
Oh, yeah. Being a trainer is, you got to hustle, because it's like, you can go to a gym and just stand there and be like, all right, people aren't coming to you. You got to really work and sell and talk to people. It's, you're your own salesman.
Uh-huh.
But
Sandbox
I was training.
Sandbox Fitness in particular, at what point were you like, this is going to be my business?
I think it was a few years ago. I got injured, and my husband as well, and we went to the beach. We worked out on the beach, and it was one of the best workouts we've had that didn't bother us. And we kept going back and we're like, this is so amazing. Like, why does no one have this, you know?
Yeah.
And then we decided, we started looking into it. It must have been, you know, 2 years before we opened, and we started looking into it and decided just to go for it since no one had it.
Oh, wow. That's amazing. What were some of those first steps you took to actually execute?
The first steps, I guess, was more just like looking, doing research and just finding out, you know, how to keep it clean. Because we were like, what do we do with like a giant indoor sandbox? Like, that could be nasty, you know? We were like, what if it smells? What if it, you know, what if you're sweating on it? It was just kind of, we thought it might be a good idea, might not. So that was our first step. We started doing research and we found special sand that we can get made that was, you know, silica free and super clean.
Interesting, yeah.
And then once we kind of got that out of the way, business loan, because we have no money and had no money of our own. So we were just like, all right, now we got to get a business loan. And that was a pain in the butt because no one was giving business loans out at the time. Mm-hmm. So when we finally did get our business loan, we were like one of the first SBA loans from the bank in like that year.
What's another big challenge or obstacle that you've had to overcome as an entrepreneur?
There's so many.
I'm sure.
Yeah, I mean, the biggest challenge I feel is more just like knowing how to allocate the money. You know, it's like everyone wants you to advertise with them. Everyone wants you to, you know, put your money here, put your money here. And it's just like you have to figure out where, you know, when to hold back and when to actually go for it. Because, you know, you can lose your money in just like a split second from advertising. So
how do you figure that out?
I mean, I guess we did a bunch of research and we kind of were like, all right, each month we have this much set aside for advertising. And whether it's going to go into a few things or one giant advertising or marketing thing, either we'll do it, you know, we just kind of put the money aside and we go from there.
Yeah, you got to have the budget.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is Business Rockstars. We're here to inspire, inform, and connect a community of entrepreneurs. I'm Alex Worley, joined by Minna Herskowitz. She is the co-founder of Sandbox Fitness. So what would you say is your strength and your weakness as an entrepreneur?
I would say my strength is just people skills. I love, you know, talking to people, meeting people, everyone that comes in. I'm really good just with the different, you know, personalities and injuries, and everyone's got something else going on. And it's just about adapting to every situation and every person.
Making everyone feel welcome.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. It's like one big family at our studio. So it's really fun. My weakness, I mean, I've got lots of weaknesses, but I would say, I love how that one's harder for me to think about than the other one.
It's like when you're in a job interview and my weakness, how do I say this in a positive way?
I mean, my weakness, I would probably say, is organization and dealing with lawyers. I am like, I don't know lawyer lingo. I just think it's a different
overwhelming
world. Oh my God. So I make my husband do that.
Okay, got it. So it's always nice when you have people who complement your strengths and weaknesses.
Yes. Yeah.
So going back to organizational skills, what are some tools or tricks that you've incorporated to help you with those skills?
The calendar on your phone.
Yeah.
I use
so
that
basic,
thing.
So basic, but so life-changing.
Yes, I use that thing like crazy. I mean, it's like if I have to post something, because, I mean, your mind can go all over the place when you're an entrepreneur. You're trying to do 20 different people's jobs at once. Mm-hmm. So it's really hard. So it's like, okay, I got to post. I got to email that person back. I've got to go train a client, and then I got to call this person. So it's just, I put it all on my phone.
So you take it a step further than a to-do list. You actually, like, schedule when you're going to do these items.
Yeah.
Including social media posts.
Yes. Otherwise, it doesn't happen.
Yeah. That's a great tip. Mm-hmm. So let's see. There's probably a lot of creativity in your business. How do you stay creative? Do you have a process for that?
I do. I actually love to explore other fitness studios. I watch a lot of online videos as well, but I find, like, when I do it, I actually know what's working and what's going on. So I like to take other trainers' classes. I think it's good to learn from other people and get new ideas and also see, like, what else is out there, what other fitness studios are out there and the
latest and greatest. Stay inspired.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And then probably keeping up with the latest trends, too, because a lot of times people want certain things at different times or different seasons.
Yeah. And what's cool about our studio is that we could always adapt to the new trends because it's just sand, you know.
Yeah.
Our floor is sand, and then you can bring in any cool new workout and new fun tool that came out that year.
Yeah.
So it's like if I go to a fitness studio, I'm like, oh my God, I love that. I can just bring it in to our studio and add a class.
That is so fun.
Yeah.
How many people are a part of your team?
There's about 10 of us.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So you manage some people. What is that like? And what would you describe your management style like?
I'm like the super laid back boss. I feel like everyone's like friends with me, and no one's scared to tell me, you know, what they think or what's on their mind, or no, I can't do that. Or everyone's just really open. And, I feel like we're all like friends, you know, but at the same time, they know that I'm in charge and I'm kind of younger than most of them, so that's the hard part too. So it's a challenge.
Yeah, how do you deal with that, being younger and still being credible and having authority?
It's hard, but I think if you establish it in the beginning, then it's fine. I mean, we have had in the past a few obstacles where it was, you know, I think it was like a respect thing. If you don't establish that respect when you first hire someone, it just doesn't. It doesn't last.
Yeah. Any tips for establishing that respect?
I guess when you're hiring someone, for me, it was more just like a feeler. Just, I think also like having a guy to a girl. I feel like it's hard sometimes for guys to, you know, look up and check into, you know, a woman boss. And I found like one of them was just, didn't seem like respectful of, you know, me being the boss. So I was just like, you know, I don't think that would be a good fit.
Yeah. So just making sure that you're making good choices for who you hire.
So I usually can tell like when I'm interviewing the person, if this is going to be, you know, just how they talk to you and if they're
respectful. Do they take you seriously?
Yes. Or if like they're kind of just being disrespectful right away from the start, I'm like, yeah, this is not going to happen, you know?
Yeah. So you're a friend with a lot of your employees.
Yes.
So do you ever have to put the boss hat on, though, and kind of lay down the law? And how do you do that?
I do. I don't like to call people out. I feel like that's usually like when you're kind of friends with everyone, and if one person does something wrong, you don't want to call them out and be like, hey, you did this. So,
yeah,
you
especially
know.
In front of everyone.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So usually what I do is I send out just an email. I'll send out like a mass email or a mass text to all the trainers, so that way no one feels like they're getting, you know, just like targeted.
Singled out.
And I just, you know, say, hey, this has been going on, you know, please make sure to, you know, do this next time. And so that way it's just a reminder so that
But you never like call out the name, right?
Yeah.
It's just a more of a universal, like, hey, here's a reminder.
Exactly.
Of something I expect.
Mm-hmm. And unless it's something that happens like a bunch of times with one person, then obviously I'll have a, you know, I'll call them and have a talk with them. But so far it hasn't been too much of an
issue.
Yeah,
you haven't had to call anyone out. That's always really nice.
Yeah.
So what is the biggest lesson you've learned on your entrepreneurial journey?
The biggest lesson I've learned is that there's going to be plenty of slow days and slow times and slow months. But if you believe in it and you just push through, it will thrive, because I feel like it's like the same. I mean, I kind of compare it to having a child. I don't have one, but
you would imagine.
It's like you don't give up on your child. You know, it's like you just always believe in what you've done, and you believe that it's going to thrive and get bigger and better, even when there are times that are not amazing, and you'll push through.
Awesome. Thank you so much to my guest, Minna Herskowitz. She is the co-founder of Sandbox Fitness. We are here to inspire, inform, and connect a community of entrepreneurs. I'm Alex Worley, and this is Business Rockstars.
An entrepreneur is someone who has a phenomenal idea and the tenacity to bring it to life. I never wanted to become an entrepreneur. I'm very risk averse. And frankly, I always thought of myself as being a CMO instead of someone to start and run a company. In order to raise capital, I had to get really, really personal about my problem. Most VCs are men. Most investors are men. And men, frankly, aren't really intimate with how terrible tampons are. So the first thing that I learned is if I really wanted to raise money and help that investor understand how significant the problem was, that I had to use myself as my own example. To successfully grow our product, the first problem that we had to tackle was user adoption. If I made a product that I thought was great and manufactured it and gave it to a woman who said she was really excited to use it, who didn't use it 3 months later, I knew my product would be a failure. When I hit a wall in business, I tackle it head on. There is no secret to entrepreneurship except to be tenacious and to not run out of money. Those things tend to go hand in hand. So when I have an obstacle or someone tells me no, I look at that as a genuine opportunity to learn from that experience.
When's the last time you checked your credit score? Those three-digit scores can have a huge impact on your financial life. Credit Karma can help you with free scores, free reports, and free monitoring. Credit Karma also gives you the tips, tools, and advice you need to understand your credit and how to improve it. You can even spot potential errors on your credit report. That can mean better interest rates on loans and credit cards, which can save you thousands of dollars in the long run. Signing up is completely free, no credit card needed. Visit creditkarma.com or download the Credit Karma app now.
A new poll says more Americans approve of President Trump than they do the big media. That's why millions are tuning in to Newsmax TV, America's new conservative channel. On Newsmax TV, see Bill O'Reilly, Pat Buchanan, Alan Dershowitz, Mike Reagan, and more. Bill O'Reilly's No Spin News Show is on Newsmax TV. Get it on DirecTV Channel 349, Xfinity 1115, Dish 216, U-verse 1220, Fios 615, and Spectrum. Newsmax TV, real news for real people.
You shouldn't have to choose a random lawyer who charges expensive hourly rates when you need legal help. But the legal system is so complicated, what other choice do you have when you need help with your business or want to protect your family? Start with LegalZoom. They make it easy. For more than a decade, they've provided a way for regular people like you and me to confidently navigate the legal system. LegalZoom's not a law firm, and that's how they provide such great value. They don't rely on charging you by the hour. Instead, you'll get transparent pricing and customer reviews so you know exactly what you're getting up front. If you need help with incorporation, LLCs, trademarks, last wills, living trusts, and more, LegalZoom's the smart choice. They've got the right people on hand to answer your questions. And if you need legal advice, their network of independent attorneys can provide the straightforward guidance you need in most states. Don't let legal hurdles become an excuse. Go to LegalZoom.com today to start building your own future the right way. To save even more, enter ROCKSTAR in the referral box at checkout.
Welcome back to Business Rockstars. Now let's go to Mark Lack.
How do you know if you should take your brand internationally? Joining us is Lindsay Carnett. She's the CEO and president of Marketing Maven. It's a pleasure to have you on the show.
Thanks. I'm happy to be here.
So break it down for us. How do we know if we should take the business and the brand that we have and go internationally?
So you should look at if you have a service-based business or a product-based business, and also take a look at, well, first of all, is this a product or service that they need in Germany? Is this a product or service they need in China, in whichever country? Yeah. So one of the things to look at is cultural values. So if you have a vacuum cleaner company, mm-hmm. and you are looking at selling vacuum cleaners in Mexico, it's important to know that a lot of people have tile floors. So you might want to do a stand-up mop type of vacuum and not a actual vacuum cleaner. So same thing for setting up your website. Who are your different channels of distribution in that particular country?
So basically, taking something internationally depends based on the niche and the target audience, just as it would for creating any product and marketing it to somebody. If there's a market internationally, then potentially you could start to test small with advertisements internationally or joint ventures or partners and see if there's maybe some marketplace out there that you could capitalize on.
Yeah, I mean, some regions of the world are entry points for test grounds. A lot of people test products in Scandinavia, and because it is such it's a pretty homogenous group of individuals that live there. And so you can test your messaging, you can test with the different retailers. And this is talking about product marketing. Okay. So if it performs well in Scandinavia, it could be a good indicator that potentially you could take it to other European countries and then also to the US if you're not already starting in the US.
So how do we know if a brand is not the right fit? Because I think there's a lot of business owners that might be like, well, is it cost more? Is it going to be more expensive for me? like, maybe it's the right fit, maybe there's other people out there, but what if I just want to keep my business in the United States? Like, how does somebody know the difference between you should and you shouldn't?
Well, first of all, you need to look at the regulatory environment. So if you are, I mean, even with consumer electronics, if you are looking at the type of plug, the type of electrical outlet to use, if your product's not configured for that type of electrical outlet, one, there's a hurdle, but two, you have to get that certain type of approval. Same thing for the nutraceutical space too, or any types of health and beauty products. You have to look at the regulatory environment. In the US, we have the FDA. Mm-hmm. In Europe, we have EFSA. In Australia, it's called something else, TAG, I believe. So it's different in every environment. And a lot of times it can be costly to get those certain approvals. So it really has to be worth your while to strategically enter that market.
Appreciate you coming on the show and sharing that advice with us.
Thanks.
Thanks, Lindsay. Every successful business thought leader or top level achiever at some point has had a mentor, a coach, or an advisor. Joining us right now is Hillary Gadsby. She's the CEO and founder of Stiletto Gao. I want to know, for you,
yes,
you're somebody who is all about mentorship,
yes,
and working with younger girls to help them. So I want to know, before you became a mentor, how were mentors impacting you early on?
My mom was my first mentor. She failed so many times in business. She was an entrepreneur herself. And what she taught me was, every single time you fail, you just get right back up and start over. You just pivot. And that's what I've learned from her. I've been lucky that when I was in Paris, Jeanne Fiopère, the woman that I worked for, she was a mentor to me when it came to poise and being confident and standing tall and being who you are. And obviously, I've had some male mentors as well, advisors, and every single one of them has helped me get to where I am today. And I think they are the most important, especially women mentors for other women mentors. I think it's so important because we just do business very differently. We have a very different, we're very sensitive to certain things.
A man just won't understand.
That's right, exactly.
So I love that you brought that up because, you know, somebody like yourself probably would relate and gravitate more towards younger girls who are out there that are looking for mentorship in business or in life. Mm-hmm. That's what you already do, so this is no new thing for you.
No.
I also love the fact that you brought up that, you know, one of, I think, the most important lessons in life, but hands down in business, is something that your mom taught you.
Yes.
And you said that it was that, you know, failure is not the end all.
No.
You get back up, and failure is simply a lesson. And my mentor taught me the same thing, right? There's no such thing as failure. There's only results. If you didn't get the results you want, change how you went about it. Try again until you get the result.
Right.
And there's no such thing as rejection. There's only feedback. And if you didn't get the feedback you wanted, then it was either the wrong person, the wrong time, the wrong approach. Test, do it again.
Yeah.
So crucial and important. What do you feel like are some of the different ways that you've had mentors or coaches or advisors or consultants in the business realm and how that's played a role for you? For me, I've invested hundreds of thousands of dollars, up to $25,000 days, because I, like you, definitely know the importance of mentors.
Yes.
But in the business sense, how have you capitalized on mentors?
Well, I had a really great one when I first started out, and he was part of the of EO, Entrepreneurs Organization, and he has a very successful business in design. Obviously, it has nothing to do with my business. However, he was able to find special things that came out of my business to help me. Like he told me about the BHAG, the big, hairy, audacious goal, and what that would be, and then how to get there. So I spent hours with him at the beginning of my business, and he helped me leaps and bounds about how to do proposals, how to charge. You know, I wasn't charging enough, so he taught me how to do that. I feel like women, unfortunately, we have we don't see the value in what we bring to the table in business.
Not just women, by the way.
It's not just women, but it tends to be more women feel that way.
Self-worth.
We don't. It's the self-worth thing, and I feel like there needs to be more of that. We need to provide that self-worth and say, you can do this and charge more. And so I learned that actually from a man.
That's fantastic. I mean, because those lessons carry over for women and for men.
They sure do.
I appreciate you for coming on the show.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, Hillary. I'm Mark Lack. This is Business Rockstars. We connect a community of entrepreneurs, and you can join us on Facebook, Twitter, and online at businessrockstars.com.
Business Rock Stars.